step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Into this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 721. I am Lisa Sheps, and I'm joined by guest co-host, Mr. Matrix Kilgore.
What's up, folks?
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. This show, as it does every Wednesday, streams live at koop.org. Stick with us.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
But what about trust? What about trust?
It is Wednesday, May 24th, 2023. On the show today, we have Ground Floor Theater in their production of Sanctuary City. And then later, we'll be talking to the Alchemy Theater's cast of their musical, The Baker's Wife. And of course, we're going to have a lively discussion of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Boston, and New Hampshire. Stick with us.
My life.
This is such a beautiful song, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, you can't nod on the radio. You have to actually speak.
I know. I can't hear the song, though.
Well, you could be wearing headphones and you'd be able to hear it.
You know, I could.
But you're not. Before I introduce this disembodied voice that we're hearing, I want to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar. I had no idea that it was the birthday of, what's his name? I just lost his name. She looks just like a woman. Bob Dylan.
Oh, wow.
Matrix Kilgore, welcome back to the show.
Good luck. Yes, I'm glad to be back.
I'm so happy to have you here.
I know. Anytime I get to spend with you, Lisa, is a blast.
You're filling Nicole's pumps, and you look great in them.
Hey, I love it.
So, happy to have you back. I don't know that we've ever had you on since you've had your new position.
I think one time.
Did you? Okay. Well, tell people. Are you allowed to tell people what you do?
Oh, sure. I guess we're going to do it now.
Do it.
I work at Texas Commission on the Arts, where we use public funding to support the field of the arts across Texas.
The FOAT. Field of the Arts, Texas.
Oh, yes. I was like, what is this acronym?
Yeah.
So I specifically work with theater organizations, dance organizations, and with arts education. So I get the fun stuff.
Yeah. And you're traveling around the state?
I do. I travel around the state seeing the great work that a bunch of different arts organizations do to share the arts with their community.
That's amazing. Well, let's introduce the other folks that are sitting here in the audience with us today. We have Andrea Nunez. Hi, Andrea.
Hello, Lisa.
How are you?
I'm phenomenal.
Good. You have co-hosted here with me before.
Yes, two other times.
Yes, you have. Mm-hmm. And Ariel Levin.
Hello, everyone.
And it's funny, I've been working with Ariel and all the people here for the past 2 months, and I still had to look up your name on the sheet of paper. And Michael Galvan.
Yo,
welcome back. And to be fair to me, it's not that I don't know who you are, it's just I don't trust myself, so I have to write it down, everything I do. So that piece of music that you actually were listening, you could have listened to here in the studio, but y'all were chit-chatting. And then I turned it off and had to listen to headphones, was from The Color Purple. And it was, What About Love?
Yeah.
With, Cynthia Erivo and, Danielle Brooks.
Danielle.
Yeah. So they're making a movie.
They are. The trailer just dropped.
And that's what I'm doing. See, there?
I'm dropping it. I'm so excited. Yes, I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, me too. Look,
I mean, there are a lot of people who are a little trepidatious about a remake.
What's the trepidatious?
Well, you know, some people don't like to mess with, you know, close to perfection.
Well, no. So realize that the other movie, The Color Purple, was not a musical.
This is a musical.
Arguably, it's a different thing.
A very different thing, I think. And I think tells different parts of the story than the original movie does.
Agreed. And it's I have not. So the Color Purple, the version that we just heard with Cynthia Rivo and Daniel Brooks, is the new version where they took like 45 minutes out of it. Yeah. I did not see it. I've heard nothing but wonderful things about it, and I believe this movie is based on that, not the original.
Yeah, I'm excited about the cut. I'm excited about the colors. That
it looked beautiful. Like, anybody else see it?
No, I have not.
I have not seen it.
Well, you know what you can do. You can go to offstageonair.com and there will be a link to it later tonight when I post the show.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice.
How convenient. Mm-hmm. How convenient.
Okay. All right. That's all I wanted to say about that. all right. Well, thank you all for being on the show. That's it for today.
Yeah. That's a wrap, folks.
We do have one review of the stage play of Brokeback Mountain.
Whoa.
What? They did a stage play of that.
They did. There's a stage play. Everybody's eyes are like wide here. So, I wish the video was up today. What?
My friend.
Put that microphone right next to your mouth.
My friend from my high school theater program, Mike Feist, is doing this in London.
Yes.
I think it's the first. Yeah,
it's in London. It's in the West End.
Yeah.
Whoa. And he's playing yes.
One of the main. Yeah.
Whoa. Yes. He got great notices. So Mike Feist, he's your friend.
Well, yeah, I mean, from high school, we've totally lost touch.
Well, that point. No, still. It's Mike Feist and, oh my God, Lucas Hedges. And Lucas Hedges is playing the role that, what's his name, played?
Jake Gyllenhaal?
No, the other
Heath
one.
Ledger.
Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
Which I think you're going to disagree with me, but for some reason, the names Heath Ledger and Lucas Hedges sound the same to me. I thought, oh. Whatever. Anyway, the guy that's playing the Jake Gyllenhaal is your friend, Mike Feist. And this is a
that's crazy.
Self-described play with music. So it's not a musical, but there is a woman whose name is Edie Reeder. Off to the side, and she's like the band. They call her a bandolier. She plays songs and sings, written by Dan Gillespie Sells.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So she's on the side of the theater as they're just
evidently. Yeah, and here's a picture of her.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's like weaving music in, but it's not
that.
A musical per se.
Well, you know, we've actually, because you listen to the show every week, you have heard our discussions on the differences between a musical and a play with music.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yep, I've heard
to refresh
that
everybody's memory.
Pushes the story forward.
A musical, the music is part of the story and pushes the story forward. And a play with music, not necessarily so. Mm-hmm. And they always say with musicals, if it's too emotional to say, you sing it. If it's too emotional to sing, you dance.
Mm-hmm. In a ballet.
In
a dream
the ballet,
of sorts.
In a dream ballet. don't get me started about Schmigadoon.
Love it.
Yeah, so this did not get great notices, I have to say. And I'm kind of the two leads, by the way, both West End debuts.
Mm, nice.
Yep. And Feist, then you probably even know, was Riff in West Side Story. And he was, I have to say, he was amazing. I think that's the first time I ever saw him in anything, and I thought that was great. But this review is written by Matt Wolf, reporting from London in the New York Times. He said, the bare bones of the narrative are there. The dramaticness, the bare bones of the narrative are there. The dramatically necessary flesh and blood and sinew are not. Oh my God, I can't read. Like nobody knows what I said, but is it? So anyway, that's it.
That's such a cinematic movie.
It is.
The setting is so important.
How they did that in like stage. I want to know what the set looked like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially,
well, yeah, these pictures don't really show the set.
Oh, dang.
But inevitably, I'm sure it'll be coming here at some point.
Yeah,
as
probably
things,
will.
As things do.
Turning more cinematic things into plays. I've always said, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? That'd be really cool as like,
it
a
would.
Stage play,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of things that were movies that are now plays, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh.
It started out as a play.
Yeah, I was about to say.
It was a play first, but there's a revival that's rumored to be happening. starring Sterling K. Brown.
Oh.
And Laura Benanti is Nurse Ratched.
Oh.
Okay. This excites me. All right. Well, that's it. No, then, I was like, that excites you.
Love the book.
Y'all have nothing?
No, I think it's a great play. I think those two actors in it, I would love to see that.
I've never seen the stage version.
I've seen the stage version. I saw a UT fraternity version of it.
That just sounds frightening.
Well, it was a theater fraternity. They put it on themselves, but there was some clash and some problematic things with, I guess, the director and the actors. The actors didn't learn their lines.
Really?
Yeah.
How dare they? Glad we don't have those kinds of problems.
Never, ever.
Anyway, the show first played the Court Theater in 1963. Guess who played, what's his name? I forgot the character's name, but guess who played him? The Jack Nicholson.
I was about to say the Jack part.
Yeah. Kirk Douglas.
Kirk Douglas.
And then there's a 2001 production at the Royal Theater with Gary Sinise.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I think Sterling's going to do an amazing job.
Randall McMurphy. I think so too. He's
emotional depth.
Yes. Yes. We don't know.
We don't know yet. Okay.
We don't know.
In some rehearsal room far away, not telling anybody.
There was a reading on May 28th in New York. And it was directed by the artistic director of the Young Vic, Kwame Kwiarma, which I'm sure I'm mispronouncing.
Yeah.
But that's kind of exciting, is it not?
It is.
Oh, yeah. It is.
I'm excited about what new they're going to bring to telling the story as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, I think there'll be lots of different lenses you could see that under. I mean, it's got some age to it, so it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Let's hope it ages like a fine wine.
I hope so.
Please. I hope so.
Like a Baron von Rothschild Chateau Lafite, 1981.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
Yes, that's
That's finer than I know.
That's the finest thing I know. Yeah.
Okay, there's an interesting thing in the New York Times Magazine, the Ethicist newsletter, and this is. Just an ethicist that answers questions. And the question came from someone who, I'll just read the question. I'm involved with a well-regarded community theater that has made significant efforts to diversify its membership, cast, and audience. A conflict has arisen over a proposed production of Fiddler on the Roof. The director proposing the production has committed himself to colorblind casting. Others involved say that in view of the Jewish community the play is about, they would consider this to be a cultural appropriation. How should we approach this conflict in values? And it's interesting because I do think it brings up a lot of lots more questions than it brings answers.
And I would also argue that what one thinks of as Jewish may not be the full picture because there are Jewish people of all different colors.
Correct.
Yes, indeed.
Correct. But specifically, these are Ashkenazic Jews in Eastern Europe, which less so.
Less so.
But
you're not going to have you could, I guess, potentially have a cast full of Jewish people, but then I...
Yeah, and I'm so conflicted. I actually, in this particular instance, I don't think it's as important to have a cast full of Jewish people, although I think a cast bereft of Jewish people would be wrong.
Yes.
And a production team bereft of Jewish people is also definitely wrong.
And one would hope that the director of the production would have a heritage, a Eastern European Ashkenazic heritage. That's what I would hope. But it's interesting when the original Fiddler, guess who they were talking to for the part of Tevye originally? Not Jewish, I'll tell you that right now.
Oh. Yul Brynner.
Frank Sinatra.
What?
Sinatra.
Yeah. So
that would be. Italian. He's Italian.
That would be a stretch of an interpretation.
Yeah.
But this is it's so interesting in theater when we talk about authenticity, representation. It's not clear cut.
No, and I think colorblind casting is not where we need to be going. That if anything, should... colorful casting.
Well, color. I think that's what they mean by colorblind casting. I mean, it's, and we've talked about this on the show a lot. I think what proved it to me a long, long time ago was the Brandy rendition of Cinderella, when you have Brandy's black, Asian man was the prince who was the son of a black woman and a white man. And there was never any question. It was never questioned. It was like, okay. And we all accepted it.
I mean, if a pumpkin can turn into a carriage and we're accepting that, I think we could do the whole thing. And Brandy's coming back as Cinderella again.
Yeah.
Just not to take us on a tangent.
That's
but
true.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
That's true. And then this brings up the questions of when we're doing things. Well, I'll just read it. This talk of authenticity, I should say who this person's name is.
The ethicist.
The ethicist, if I can find it. They sometimes.
I want that job.
Kwame Anthony Appiah. Yeah, I heard him interviewed on some podcast. I can't remember what it was. So he said, this talk of authenticity doesn't explain why it's a non-issue when a character of Chinese ancestry is played by an actor of Indonesian ancestry, or indeed when an Ashanti character from Ghana somehow speaks like a Yoruba from Nigeria. So we're assuming that, you know, all Asians can play any Asians and all black people can play anybody from Africa. And I don't necessarily disagree all the time because it would be difficult to, like, if you're doing a play from a small country in Africa, how many actors are you going to get that are descended from that one small country?
Specifically.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Certainly, it would be worth trying. Anybody else have
any thoughts?
And
I think it's worth having the conversation. That
about.
Is the,
absolutely.
The large
that's
thing.
What it comes to, I read an article actually recently, I think it was like in the New York Times or something, about how Jewish women in particular are, like, actually very rarely cast in Jewish roles in Hollywood specifically.
Sarah Silverman talks about this constantly, and she's right. It's getting better, I think.
But I'm with you. I think, like, it's not necessarily necessary at all because it's storytelling. That's
I guess
the whole
it would depend on the piece. And I mean, I just can't imagine Mrs. Maisel as not Rachel Brosnahan.
Yeah.
Right?
I was thinking that.
And there is a character that is a Jewish character, and Judaism plays a pretty big role in that character. So by most arguments, that character should have been played by a Jewish actor. But she's so amazing in it. I don't know.
And that's a beautiful thing. And it's like, it starts to get a little murky.
Yeah.
But
well, we've run out of time. I have a whole list of other things that we were going to talk about. I'm glad we did that. I should say that Theater Camp, there's a movie called Theater Camp that's going to be, that has been done by, what's his name? Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, Ben Platt.
Ben Platt and another person who I should know, I can't remember. But there's a trailer for that. You can see it. It looks great if you're a theater person.
Theater Camp.
Only Murders in This Building musical.
Oh.
Musical.
Yep. Oh, a musical episode.
Oh.
There's rumors of a musical episode next season. And then the final thing is, these are all links on offstageonair.com. Alex Newell was on The Voice. And she was singing something from, actually, I believe Alex Newell uses he, him pronouns. He was singing, it was hard because he looked beautiful in this thing. He sang a song from Korn, on, The Voice.
Wow.
And there's a link to that as well. So we're going to just take a break and we're going to listen to, a song called Korn from Shucked. Here it is. We'll be right back.
Korn! Yes, we said Korn. Just as sure as the day
we are back.
You're
listening to Offstage and On Air with Lisa Sheps and
Matrix Kilgore
and
Michael Galvan
and
Ariel Levin
and
Andrea Nunez.
Yay! Well, we're going to switch gears and talk to our first guest, which is Ground Floor Theater and their production of Sanctuary City.
Woo.
In light of pure transparency, people know that I'm the co-artistic director at Ground Floor Theater, and I was, I'll just say, very involved in this show with Andrea Nunez, who is the director, and I'm just going to say, so you are the director, Andrea.
Yes, I am.
And then Ariel, what is, tell me, what is your character, what is your character, and tell me about that character.
Yeah, well, I'm playing the role of G, and, well, I'm sure we'll get into why she's called G. Maybe we will.
Maybe we will, maybe we won't, we never know.
And G is a 17-year-old girl, although the play spans across time, so it kind of goes until she's about 21 years old.
About to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
College.
About to graduate college.
June 3rd, yeah. Somewhere around.
So from about
June 4th. June 4th. Come on, June 4th.
I can't remember. June 4th is the graduation. I didn't have to memorize those lines. Michael, tell us about your role.
Yeah, so I play the character, his name is B. Again, they also, you know, they both start at the same age, at 17. They're both seniors in high school at that point. And yeah, they are basically undocumented immigrants living in Newark, New Jersey, just going through the struggles of that time. And I mean, the play takes place, what, two, three months after 9/11?
Couple of months after 9/11.
Yeah, a couple months after 9/11. And, you know, what the struggles of that brings upon them as well, too. And just families and, you know, dealing with your friends at that time as well. You know, what would you do with your friends? And they're just they're a very hardworking person and a very dedicated person. I will say it that. And
nothing, if you say so yourself.
If I say so myself. Exactly.
Andrea, tell us about the show. How would you describe the show if somebody asked you, what's the show about?
Well, literally speaking, the show is separated into two parts. The first part being an almost vignette of memories, abstraction. Sometimes these memories repeat the same, like, plot line. Well, plot line as in, what'd you eat? What'd you get for dinner? What'd you eat? Oh, where are you going to school? Are you going to go to school today? Where are you going to go to school? And it's like, we're supposed to just jump right in and not take a breath at all into the memories of these two friends. And then by part two of this show, after a transition, we're just dropped into one long continuous take of the most dramatic reality show scene you will ever see. Yeah. And this show's got great.
So what's it about?
Oh, I should start with that.
Yeah, we have the structure of the play. I'd like to know what it's about.
Structure. I needed the structure. Well, it is a play about two undocumented immigrants. They're teenagers, and they find sanctuary, a safe space within one another. G deals a lot with domestic violence in her household, and B deals a lot, and no spoilers, with getting close to another person.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an amazing piece, and we opened last weekend, and it's just amazing to talk to the audience when they come out afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Tears streaming down their faces.
Tears streaming down. There's a lot of emotion. There's some laughter that we hear in there as well.
Thankfully. It's needed.
Thankfully. It's needed. They kind of need it. It's after, like, the tragic scene, and then we have, like, a funny bit. And people are just quick to laugh and release that tension.
Mm-hmm. But then we pull you right back in.
Yeah.
So this play is written by Pulitzer Prize winning Martina Majok. Mm-hmm. And this play, she just took home the Obie, which is the Off-Broadway award for playwriting. It did not play on Broadway. It played off-Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And she's currently represented on Broadway in a show called Cost of Living, which she won the Pulitzer for and is up for a Tony.
Wow.
So,
she's out there.
And if we had gotten to it, she was featured prominently in an article I was going to talk about playwrights in New York. Getting the Tonys back on.
Yeah,
the Tonys. The Writers Guild of America. To allow the Tonys to take place. But she is, she's incredible. And she's all that these days.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Especially after that Tony nomination for The Cost of Living. I mean, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
And
to her
Pulitzer
on that.
For Cost of Living.
And Pulitzer.
Gosh. Yeah. My gosh. So, Andrea, this is part of Ground Floor Theater's Directors Rising program. What does that mean?
The Director Rising program means that we give young artists a chance to debut their directing skills.
What? So this is your first time to direct?
This is my first time I ever directed literally anything, if we're not including like a Cinderella play I did for high school that got taken away from me.
Oh.
So how did that, I mean, and we've I have to say, we've never talked about this, but how did you feel? Were you nervous about taking on this? I should say that when I read this piece before, I looked at it and go, oh my God, I can't direct this.
Wow.
I've directed a few things. So I had then handed you the script and asked you to read it, and then I got your thoughts, and we decided that you would direct it. How were you feeling when that happened? What was going through your mind?
I honestly couldn't believe it. I had just joined Ground Floor Theater as an intern and recently got promoted to manager, and then you offered me this show to direct, and I'm like, I don't know who you think I am. I'm mainly an actor and a girl just trying to find her way, but here I am getting my own chance to direct something so beautiful. So grateful.
And she did a great job.
Amazing.
Indeed.
She did a great job. So how was the process for the two of you, Michael and Ariel? Because this play... this play is a difficult play.
Yeah.
And especially for these two characters, because as Andrea said, that first part is very nonlinear. It jumps around a lot. How was the process for y'all?
It's like... this rehearsal process was not like any I've ever done before. It's like practicing, honestly, for like a marathon, like a 5K, like, or what are those ones? What are the like triathlons?
5K is shorter than a marathon.
Oh God. What's the longer ones? It's one of those. It's one of those. But just, I mean, like it's such sudden change of emotions that you have to, you know, be ready for, and, you know, make sure that they are truthful, you know, in that sense. And so that was another, you know, hard part to just kind of, you know, get into, because those shifts are so fast. And also just like the play, like the first act not being linear, it like jumping around in those memories was also tough to be like, how am I going to memorize this? Oh, I'm not like, oh yeah, after this part comes up. It's like, no, this is a completely different memory that you're having to memorize.
Sure.
And so, that was a bit of a challenge, but I mean, that didn't stop us. You know, we kept going. We would meet up and, you know, read those lines. Thankful for this one app, the Line Learner app, where you can just record all your lines
in
that
as
well.
Shout
out to Line Learner.
I used a different one, but that's good, where I didn't have to record
that's
it.
That's
the, did it for me. But Ariel, how was it for you?
Yeah, it was a really fun process. It was very collaborative, because especially that first section of the play, because it's nonlinear and it's jumping around kind of in time and space, it was almost like, sometimes it felt almost like dancing a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like we're collaborative, like as a collective with Andrea, we're emergently like kind of navigating around how to move through space and time and like what that looks like. And I love that Andrea like included us, you know, and involved us.
Yeah.
Michael and I, and
Christian Bear, who plays our third character.
Yeah. Yeah. You really involved us in that collaboration in the process, which is super cool. I wasn't necessarily sure what to expect with that, because it's been a while for me since I've been on a stage. So that was a really cool discovery.
Wonderful. We are just about almost out of time already. I know. It happens so fast. So, Andrea, tell people why they want to come and see this show at Ground Floor Theater.
You're going to want to come see this show because there's nothing like raw live theater that can really be a channel for people to empathize and understand something about someone else's story and something about their own stories within themselves and how they navigate love and loss and attachment. And I believe it's a story for everyone, but it's also a very personal story about undocumented immigrant experience that needs to be reflected and told, which is our mission at Ground Floor.
It is indeed. And it's also, I mean, I would argue that even through that, that people that can't directly associate their lives with these kinds of stories. There's so much in there that is universal. Mm-hmm. Love being one of them, loss being another of them. So it's cool. Matrix, you have anything you want to ask these fine folks before we set them on their way?
I really want to ask, how was it creating in an environment like Ground Floor as your first directorial debut, right? Like the Ground Floor is very special to me. So
that's why y'all are all in this room right now.
But like, can talk a little bit about the culture and the space that Lisa really creates for directors to come into her theater and really create freely.
Well, I love Ground Floor Theater too. And Ground Floor Theater loves me. I'd say the first rehearsal that involved the whole cast and some of the crew having to be a workshop, an EDI workshop and an intimacy workshop to just set up the environment for collaboration as a brave space and as a space for us to create our art as safely as we can, to check in, to care for ourselves and care for one another. It's such an important thing that I feel like, I don't know why theater and collaborative art lacks this. Like, we're working with like real human stories and we are humans ourselves trying to balance this humanity and tell such, I mean, this story is tragic, dare I say. It's so it feels tragic, I think.
Yeah, well, we leave our audience thinking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. You
know, some of the more Pollyanna people in the world might come up with a whole different stake at the end.
Who knows?
I see nothing but butterflies and puppy dogs.
To answer your question, it was beautiful to work with Ground Floor Theater.
Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks for that question. all right. Great. Well, you've had your first weekend. You run for two more weekends.
Two more.
And where can folks go to get more information about this show?
You can visit www.groundfloortheater.org/sanctuary.
There you go. Well, thank you so much. I look forward to the next 2 weeks. I don't have to say good luck because you don't need it.
Oh. Break legs.
Right. Break legs, everybody.
And hearts.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Andrea Nunez, Aria Levin, and Michael Galvin of Ground Floor Theater's production of Sanctuary City, playing now through June 3rd. And the piece of music that I chose to play this is called Stay from Amelie. And I just want... you get it. Here it is. We'll be back.
Stay.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me and Matrix. It's really kind of odd having my own company on as a guest.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a little odd.
I love
it. But it actually also helps because I'm very familiar with the piece.
I would hope so.
Well, because I'm not familiar with everything. Like The Baker's Wife, for instance, don't know anything about it. we're going to talk about that later. Let me, stepping into the room, speaking of The Baker's Wife, even though we're not going to talk about it yet, I do want to introduce y'all, in case you want to join in the conversation, to of my favorite people in the world, the Lunton Fontaine of the current Austin theater world.
Aww. That's so nice, isn't it?
Right?
Sarah Marie Curry, welcome back.
Hi.
And Sebastian Vitale, welcome
back.
Hola,
everyone.
Hola. So we're just going to talk about things that are going on here locally for just a little second. The one thing I do want to talk about and make sure people are aware of are the citywide auditions. I'm not sure if the signups are closed or not.
They are.
They're closed. Yeah. So I'm going to talk about them, but you can't do anything about it. You missed it. You should have answered the email when it came to you the first time.
Right.
But that's in two weekends. It's on the 3rd and 4th of the 3rd and some of the 4th.
Exactly, not 3rd and 4th.
3rd and 4th. Are you involved?
I am. I'm going as a producer and also as an actor.
Oh, so okay. I will be there as a producer. I will be taking notes about
what
you.
What are you going to do for your audition?
Maybe something from The Baker's Wife. I don't know. Gotta make sense, right?
There you go. So that's happening. And the other thing I want to talk about, there's stuff that I didn't know was happening. Walking Shadow Shakespeare, which we had here on the show 6 months or so ago, that we talked about this. They're doing a production of Cymbeline in Ramsey Park on the 28th of whatever this month is, May. And this is the thing where they just do one day of rehearsal. Hold on, there's a little thing.
What?
Yeah, oh, it's true.
Wow.
For Shakespeare?
For Shakespeare, they do one day of rehearsal, and then they come and just do it. And
do they do virtual rehearsals, or is it literally
one day they get together
on book,
like
off book?
Red Rabbit, White Rabbit.
Yeah, but that's specifically written.
No, White Rabbit, Red Rabbit. You should be talking to me because we produced.
I know, I love it. I'm so sad that I saw it because it means I'll never be able to like
do it. Me too. Yeah, and I did it. I admit so. White Rabbit, Red Rabbit is done without rehearsal, and the performer that does it has never seen it, and they're handed a envelope with a script in it and a vial of poison, and then they just open it and read.
It's so beautiful.
Yes, it's fun.
I love it.
So anyway, Walking Shadow Shakespeare, you can get more information at walkingshadowshakespeare.org or just search for it. That's happening.
Okay, but what's the Cymbeline about? What do you know what
Cymbeline,
it's about?
I don't know. Yeah, it's I'm not a big, don't tell anybody.
Okay.
I don't like to admit this, but I'm not a big fan of William Shakespeare.
What?
That's
and Cymbeline is one that is not done all that often, so I know very little about it.
Don't take
it's not. Do you know? I've never seen it in real life.
Yeah. And if I had the right website up, it actually explains a little bit of it, but I actually printed out the website that just has the cast list.
I don't know. It's probably something about a girl with some poison and a death and a family.
Yeah, somebody dies.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I want to talk about is a new theater company that I had never heard of until today, called Saturni Theater. And they're doing a production of The Zeus Story by Edward Albee.
Ah.
And it's being done out at South Park Meadows in the in an amphitheater there. It's the Grove Amphitheater and Park.
Is that West Austin?
It's South.
South.
It's South.
Slaughter and I-35.
Dang. Wow.
Dang. Anyway, so
a lot of new companies, right?
Well, this is the thing that I've talked about. This is what I talk about Austin. With all these theater schools, we have this natural progression. So always at the end of the school year, you get a group of theater artists that come in. They start, let's do a show, and they start a theater company. And then there's about, I'd say, 10, 15 theater companies that start every year, 10, 15 theater companies that vanish. But good. I love that. I love that about Austin. I love the whole thing.
But don't you think it's getting bigger, like industry in general?
Yeah, well, that's the goal.
It is the goal.
Yeah, yeah. We want to make Austin a theater town. Let's talk about the other things that are happening around town so that we can get to talk to Sarah Marie and
birds,
Sarah Jen.
Rain, grass. Those are the things happening around town.
Okay, well, thank you for being on the show. We'll see you next week.
That's a wrap.
Well, The Baker's Wife, which we're just about to talk about, is playing through the 11th. The Chronicles of Indigenous Offspring, Zelma III over at Hyde Park through the 3rd. It's gotten good notices.
I want to see that.
Yeah. We just talked to Sanctuary City at Ground Floor Theater. I would like to see that one. It closes on the 2nd of June. And then starting June 2nd, is Big Fish over at Austin Playhouse.
Another one I want to see.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Have you seen the musical?
I've seen the musical. Okay. I've seen the large musical. This is, they're doing the small version. Yeah. So I'm excited to see
Junior.
It.
Me too.
Today in theater history. You ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
This is that time where I don't know anything that Lisa
says.
I will just say that,
Nicole usually sings me a Today in Theater History song.
Today in theater history is the stuff that happened today.
And here we go. Up in One opened in 1979 at the Biltmore. Never heard of it. Short Eyes opened in 1974. It's got a picture of William Shakespeare on the playbill.
So you love it. It's your favorite.
It is. And it's the New York Shakespeare Festival at the Vivian Beaumont Theater. This is another one I haven't heard of. A Streetcar Named Desire.
Sounds terrible.
It's not going to go anywhere.
Titles.
That opened in 1950.
Too sexy.
Birthday. Too sexy for my show. Douglas Fairbanks was born in 1883. You remember that?
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Betty Garrett in 1919. She's older than I didn't think she was that old. Charles Kimbrough. In 1936, Joan Collins.
Oh, Joan.
Doesn't give a date, you know, because of course. Maybe.
I just saw her the other day. She looks great.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's like 90-something.
Oh, is she still alive?
115.
Okay. Isn't she? Well, if you just saw her, you must have.
I think she's alive.
Leah
really?
Del-
she is.
She is still alive.
What? Yeah.
She is. She had blue on. It was great.
I was watching the news this morning, and I heard, I was not in the room where the TV was, but they were talking about Mary Tyler Moore, and they were saying good things about her. I said, oh my God, did Mary Tyler Moore die? 6 years ago. She died 6 years ago. Anyway.
But Carol Channing's still alive, right?
No.
Dang it. Okay.
Not that she, a couple years ago.
Just a few.
Barbara Barry's birthday and Randy Graff's birthday. Oh, also I didn't mention Leah Delaria. So Randy Graff is interesting. Look what else opened. Sorry, another piece of 1966 MAME opened.
Oh, MAME opened.
We need a little Christmas right this very minute.
Do you do musicals yourself, Lisa? Have you ever done
musicals? I have. I've done many. Yes.
I would love to see you there.
No, you
we could do MAME with you.
Yeah.
You could.
You could be MAME, yeah.
But Randy Graff, do y'all know who she is?
No. No.
Me neither. But look at what she's done. She started in Grease.
Okay.
She was in Sarah Vaugh, and I know y'all don't know what that is, but we talk about it on the show all the time. Les Miserables, City of Angels, Falsettos, Laughter on the 23rd Floor, Moon Over Buffalo, High Society, A Class Act, and Fiddler on the Roof.
Wow. So she's like the big damn deal we'd never heard about.
She's a big damn deal that we'd never heard about. Happy birthday to her. And she was also in... there it is. I didn't say it. But Mr. Saturday Night.
Oh.
One Billy Crystal. So we're going to go away with hearing her lovely voice from Mr. Saturday Night. This is called My Wonderful Pain in the Beep. I'm sure we could say it, but I'm not sure. So it's beep.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Funny thing, you should have a doubt in your
We are
mind.
Back. You are still listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Matrix. We are wishing a bon voyage or a good trip or whatever to Nicole Shiro.
Oh, yes.
Who I don't know where she is now, but she started out in Turkey.
Wow.
And I'm not talking about the sandwich.
You're talking about the country.
Not Turkey. Sorry. Oh, my God. Nothing to do with each other. Lisbon.
Not at Lisbon. All. Okay. No, very different.
Very different.
Is there a Lisbon sandwich? Wait, what?
Yeah, there's a turkey sandwich, but there's not a Lisbon sandwich, but there is port.
Well, now I'm hungry.
There we go.
Yeah, in Portugal. Because Lisbon is
thirsty.
In Portugal. Anyway, so I hope she's having a great time. We miss her dearly. That's it. So we're here to talk to Sarah Marie Curry and Sebastian Vitale about The Baker's Wife at Alchemy Theater. This is y'all's reprising a relationship on stage at the...
But now she gets to be the mean one.
Yeah!
Yes.
Well, so the interesting thing, and you probably know this, The Baker's Wife never made it to Broadway.
It had a
very hard beginning, and it closed before it ever got
ending.
Into New York.
Everything was hard for it.
Yeah.
Like, it was a flop.
Yeah. So tell us what this show is about. Is it about a baker?
It is about a baker, and it's about his wife, and not the baker's wife from Into the Woods, which is the number one question I get asked when I tell people.
No way.
Yeah, bless my... Like, a lot of my friends don't know a lot about musical theater, so they're like, oh, is it like a spinoff from Into the Woods? And I'm like, no, it is not.
Oh, my gosh.
It's about...
It's about two people that get lost in the woods.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. No,
they're looking for looking for a cow and shoes and some hair.
No, this is France. And the thing is that this baker comes to this town with the company of his wife, and it's kind of weird because like I'm the baker and I am so much older than my wife, and everyone's like freaked out about it, and the relationship.
That never happens in real life, by the way.
I don't know what they were talking about.
What's really interesting is I personally believe that the protagonist is the villagers themselves as a whole entity, because they're the ones that really experience the change. They're the ones that like really grow and develop. We just happen to be the catalyst for them, and their only want and desire. They have a whole I Want song called Bread. They just want bread.
Bread.
And so this baker rolls up and makes the most delicious bread in the whole entire ever of France, which must be a big deal.
and they need
anybody
the bread.
Anybody inside he's got to close the the shop closes, right? At
yeah.
some point,
and yeah.
that's what causes the,
well,
all the...
Well, he stops baking?
Because Jean-Pierre runs off with a hot young man played by Cameron LeBrie, who sings this song called
Proud... I don't know who that person is, but I want his name.
Right?
Yes.
He sings a song called Proud Lady, and it's stupid. Like, he sings it, and
so
I'm
good.
I'm backstage, and I just want to, like, throw things at him in a loving
underwear
way.
Underwear, specifically,
yeah,
she said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, right?
Speaking of... I mean, this is not does not have anything to do with the show, but you're playing at the Master George Theater,
mm-hmm.
which is about the size of this studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I counted the cast.
It's a lot.
There's like 14 or 15 people.
I don't know what it
is. I always thought, I didn't know anything about The Baker's Wife, but I always thought it was a little small musical. It's kind of huge cast.
Yeah, it's got a whole village.
It was.
Including the audience. The audience is the village.
Could have been puppets.
Yeah.
It could have. But no, the thing is that it's a really big cast for such a small space, but that is the magic that Michael Cooper, the director, does. Like, it just sets it so beautifully, and it all makes sense the way it is. And it's like Sarah Marie said, it's an ensemble show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything is about the ensemble. We're just part of it, and it's so beautiful, the changes that they make during the show, that it's like inspiring somehow.
Oh, that's amazing. And is this... Would you classify this as a musical comedy?
It depends on how you direct it, right? Like, Michael Cooper really wanted to find the real realism and turn away towards that, like, typical golden era sort of musical comedy. There's a lot of darker material in this play, a lot of misogyny, a lot of, like, small town themes that gets presented. Mm. And when you see them... If you see them in a musical comedy now, like, our generation would be like, oh, that's kind of upsetting. If you see it the way he's done it, you're like, that is upsetting and correct. That is exactly how it is, if that makes any sense
what
at
happened?
All.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the response of the audience is, like, so mixed because they were not expecting that. And some of them, like, rejects that from some people from the cast, which, like, they can't somehow... separate them from the reality, and it's so strong.
We have this gentleman, his name is Tom Swift, and he literally plays Santa Claus every year and looks exactly like Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And he plays a horrible abusive man in the musical. Yes, and the I bless him because the audience leaves going like, that guy, and I'm like, it's acting. It's acting, babe.
It's acting. Actually, we were just talking about that recently, about so many performers have a difficult time playing a not nice person.
Not me.
I love it. I love it.
I'm sad I have affairs the whole show.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, just some of the background of the show I found interesting, because it was originally going to be Frank Lesser and A. Burroughs
mm-hmm.
that were going to do it. And it was going to star Burt Lahr. Mm. And then originally Topol was supposed to play the baker.
Oh.
Speaking of Fiddler on the Roof, we keep going back to Fiddler on the Roof.
That's everything.
I think there's a connection there, but, like, because of the image of the baker and probably
yeah. sure.
Anyway, Topol was replaced by Paul Sorvino, mm-hmm. who did it along with Patti LuPone.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but then again, as we talked about it, never made it.
Was this Patti LuPone before Evita or after Evita?
This would have been in 1976. I think that's before Evita.
That's
okay.
Before
yeah.
Evita.
She was just a baby.
She was just a baby. She was probably nice back then.
School.
Yeah, right? I was
did
about
I say
to say.
That out loud?
I don't know. I read her memoir. She's always kind of spicy.
To be fair, yeah, they tried to cut Meadowlark, which, if you know it, is like a 9-minute song, and she was like, no.
Well, and Meadowlark is the one song that it's been recorded by a zillion people,
sure.
and it's known.
I think it's the only song that people recognize
get,
from
get
the
up
show.
Right next to that microphone, or we can't hear you.
Oh, my God. I've been talking and no one is...
No, you were just exceedingly okay. far
it's
away
It's the same,
time.
Like, One Night in Bangkok from Chess, which is the only... Mm-hmm. Even though Chess is gorgeous and has tons of beautiful music in it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only song people recognize from this show.
Sure.
Only one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But then it's, like, so, like... You can have fun, and then you get really sad, not just because of this song, but the entire music is amazing.
So y'all have already been playing for a few weeks, mm-hmm. yes?
Yep.
How are houses?
Full.
Yeah,
full.
As it usually is in that theater.
I mean.
Yeah.
it's a theater for 40 people, just uh-huh. 40 people, really intimate. But we are sold out almost for the entire season.
The entire run.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, then that's going to be...
June the 11th. And yep. So we're really happy. And
oh, June the 11th?
June the 11th.
That's true. I'm going to confirm that.
It's so fun and interesting, too, because I know Sebastian's played like amphitheaters in Argentina, right? And yeah. I've played like Zach Theater down to like...
Not familiar with that one.
I've never heard of them. They seem nice. But you know, you're in a huge proscenium arch where the audience is very far away. And this, I'm making out with a boy and there's an audience member that's literally 2 feet away being like, whoa.
Yeah. You've also played ground floor theater with that intimate space.
I have, but it's
but
not...
But it's bigger. It's a lot bigger.
It's a lot bigger.
It is. Yes. Like when we did Fun Home, it was in a thrust staging.
It was 3/4 round and you were right next to people.
Yeah, but they could still kind of float away.
They could.
Versus this one, I'm sitting on a bed and I'm looking to where I think I see a cat and I'm literally like looking at the necklace of a woman who's like turning away and trying to be polite.
So musicals are oftentimes when we see musicals, we love the music, we don't like the book. We love the book, we don't like the music. What do y'all love about this show?
The music.
I love the music and
oh, we didn't mention it. Stephen Schwartz.
It's Stephen Schwartz.
See, that's the thing. When you get to sing Stephen Schwartz, you sing Stephen Schwartz, you know?
But it's also about the perspective of the director. And it was written in a way for musicals that it had a happy ending. Mm-hmm. And then we don't know if we have a happy ending. We don't want to tell. Like, it's more of an open ending.
Sure.
And so it makes more sense. It makes it more real somehow. And so that's really interesting. It's not just about the story, but also the perspective of the director that you have to follow and you have to trust. And we do. And we love what we've done.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Now, I know that y'all are pretty much sold out, but where do folks go to get information if they want to try to get on a wait list or something?
Alchemytheater.org.
Awesome. And you play through the 11th of June.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm so happy to have y'all on the show.
We love you.
Well, we love you more.
We love you, Matrix.
Let's do something together in Ground Floor Theater.
Yeah,
I love that idea. Yeah. Yes. I happen to know the people that run it. It's true.
Were they like chocolates? Or?
They like everything. Mm. There's nothing they don't like. That was Sarah Marie Curry and Sebastian Vitali.
Thank you for having us.
You are welcome. Of Alchemy's Theater's The Baker Wife, playing now through the 11th. For more information, to find out if you can get on a wait list, you may visit thealchemytheater.org. And this song is from the show. It's called Merci, Madame. We will be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Matrix and Sarah Marie and Sebastian. And we're just have enough time to wrap it up. Matrix, thank you so much.
I always love being here with you, Lisa. That's great.
That is amazing. Well, last week, you know, we had Celia Hughes here and she was supposed to be here with us today. And I did get a text from her just moments ago saying that she couldn't make it. So
I love her too.
We do. Who doesn't love Celia Hughes?
Does so much for the community.
She does.
Yeah.
She, as we know, we talked about last week, she has a show here on the airwaves of Co-op, and I forgot the name of it, but it's taken the old Common Thread spot. So what's next on the agenda for you, Matrix?
Ooh, I am going to Corpus Christi for the Out of School Time Texas of Texas conference.
You can go walk along the beach.
Wait, I'm sorry. Out of School Time of Texas Time?
Out of School Time conference for Texas.
I see.
Yeah. I'm going to walk on the beach, go see Selena. It'll be great.
And Sebastian, I understand you're going to be performing on the Ground Floor Theater stage very soon.
Yes. Well, I'm not going to be performing. I'm going to be, I'm part of the production
team?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I saw your name as a performer.
No, not this time, but hopefully.
Well, and remind me the name of the show.
It's Julieta Tiene la Culpa, and it's by Alex Pedemonte. He's the director, and it's going to be so much fun.
Well, they're going to be on the show next week or the week after. So
yeah,
so that's good. We love Alex Pedemonte. We were talking about during the break. We were talking about White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, and when Ground Floor Theater did it back in 2019, Alex teamed up with us, and we did a Spanish version as well. Were you?
Because the show it's in Spanish. I was not even.
Well, it was made in Spanish. It's not. I'm talking about White Rabbit.
Yeah. Julieta Tiene la Culpa is in Spanish, but you have translation there.
Yes,
so.
that I know. Excuse me, I've got my ringer on, and I'm going to turn it off.
Who's hosting this show?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we are just about done. We got John Hofner and the Austin Common Radio Hour coming up next for his second, his penultimate episode of the Austin Common Radio Hour. John, do you want to tell people what's happening in starting in June? Oh, yeah, he's gonna rustle up. We have just like 1 minute.
Okay, real quickly, we're gonna be switching to what we're calling the co-op, Austin Cooperative.
Sorry, I did not give him any warning about this.
Yes, but we're gonna have three of us that are gonna be rotating. So it'll be Robert Sims, me, and Stacy. And it'll be fun.
Awesome. Well, good. And right. My audience knows Robert Sims. He was an apprentice of mine back in his early days. He's now a huge veteran of this.
I didn't know he was one of your
apprentices. He was my apprentice.
Awesome.
I taught him everything he knows.
And we'll be right after you as well.
Excellent.
In the new show.
And stand by for the Austin Common Radio coming up next. I will be back next week with a surprise guest host when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And this is, I always look and see what new musical things are out. And this is The Little Mermaid, or as I like to call it, La Serenita, Spanish language version of Little Mermaid, and this is Bessela. We'll be right back. Or we won't be right back. We'll see you next week.
Ella está ahí sentada frente a ti. No te ha dicho nada aún, pero algo te atrae. Sin saber por qué te mueres por tratar de darle un beso ya.